episode 18, season 3 of The Bad Apples. I'm Klaatu. I'll be your host today. Welcome. Today we're going to talk about multimedia stuff. It's going to be exciting. There's going to be a how to make your own drum kits for the Hydrogen Drum Machine program on Linux. There's going to be some Audacity tips and tutorials. And you think, oh come on, Klaatu, Audacity, the easiest program in the world, the most intuitive thing ever. What do I need to know about it? Well, if you haven't used the wildcard tool, you have not used Audacity, my friend. We'll talk a little bit about FontForge and fonts on Linux. Not much, just a little bit. And take some listener feedback, and then we'll take some of your phone calls. No, I'm just kidding. That's really about it. Okay, so admittedly, I will be one of the first people to admit that Linux is not where it needs to be for multimedia, everyday multimedia production. I know that it's possible. I know that Linux can do the job. I know that the platform is solid enough. But in terms of being an artist and saying to one's self, I think I'm going to sit down at my computer now and create something. It's just not that easy unless you spend a lot of time setting it up for yourself. Now, whose job is it to make sure that Linux is ready for multimedia? In part, it's the job of the people making the multimedia programs, the people doing Ardour, the people doing Audacity and Hydrogen, and all these other, Rose Garden, Muse, QSynth or AmSynth, all these different applications. Those are the apps that people are going to obviously look to when they think, okay, I'm an artist, I want to start using Linux, now where are the tools to ply my trade? So yeah, partly it's their responsibility to make sure that when an artist sits down in front of the computer and fires up their application, that application is stable, easy to understand, and flexible enough to be used by that artist. But if you think of those programs as, I guess you could say, the equivalent of the hardware version of those applications, for instance, Ardour being a multi-track recorder, an editor would be something like a hard drive-based DAW, digital audio workstation, that you might have gotten, 15 years ago at a store. It would have been a mixing board with a hard drive in it, or maybe not 15 years, like 10 years, with a hard drive in it, and you could record straight to the hard drive, and you could edit it and mix it and everything like that. Well, that doesn't mean that they're responsible for the sounds. And I think that the sounds that people are going to be using in Linux is kind of, I don't know who's taking responsibility for that yet. I know that there are groups out there doing patches and doing loops and pads and drum kits and things like that. But I think that in part, honestly speaking, that's kind of the artist's job. That's kind of what the artist is going to be doing. They create their sounds, they load up their patches, things like that, at least traditionally speaking, on a hardware-based system. That's quite frequently what they would do. Now, more recently, of course, not only the hardware, but also the software with programs like Logic, which comes prepackaged with, by Apple, comes prepackaged with like 15 different soft synths, with thousands of patches, and probably hundreds of samples. Of course, you have GarageBand, comes with all that and has little packs of samples and things available for it separately. All that good stuff, that is, that's making people look toward the applications themselves to prepackage all those tools in with the package. But I think strictly speaking, that's not traditionally how it was done, and I think strictly speaking, that remains really the job of the artist. I think most artists are going to want to kind of create that themselves anyway, more so than buying a box of pre-made loops and forming those into songs. Obviously, I'm not talking about the average Joe consumer who cracks open a computer and says, "I want to make a techno song," and just kind of like throws some beats together. Nothing wrong with that. It's very fun and it can be very, very creative, but it's a different brand of artistry, I think, than what I'm talking about. So not a bad brand, just a different brand. Luckily for you and me and Joe Consumer, I have the perfect solution, and the solution is to for the artists and the users and people who are interested in this sort of thing, to start building up an open library of those things that we need. Now, this is not my idea. This is something that already exists in many different fashion, in many different ways. You can find open sounds all over the place. You can find loops all over the place. You can even find drum kits available straight within Hydrogen, the drum machine program Hydrogen. So it's getting, it's pretty good. There's a lot of plugins like filters and stuff available for Ardour and Audacity. So there are resources out there, but I think that it is something to keep in mind that needs to get built up. It needs to probably get centralized, and there needs to be more of it. So with that said, let us segue quickly into a how to make a Hydrogen drum kit. It's really easy. The sounds that you are hearing segueing us into this segment were created on the Yamaha RX15 Digital Rhythm Programmer. I don't know when this thing came out. I guess it would be called vintage. It's about the size of a couple of laptops stacked on top of each other, like maybe two Sony Vaios or maybe three like MacBooks, something like that. It's fairly large. Nowadays you can get the same functionality in a simple Boss drum machine that would be no larger than a, I don't know, 320 or I guess 500 gigabyte hard drive. Not a portable hard drive, just one of those that you would set on your desk. So the cool thing about this synth is, well, number one, that it is vintage and it's got some good sort of classic drum sounds that you would find on your typical Yamaha system or Roland system. And it's neat because it's you're allowed to use the sounds. There's no provision about you're not being able to use these sounds. You purchased the synthesizer, you get to use the sounds. I purchased the synthesizer from Skrillet, who got it from someone else. I don't know who. Point is, things been handed down. And there's only like 17 sounds. There's 16 buttons. No, there's 12 buttons. There's 13 sounds. 13 buttons for the to activate the actual sound effects. And so I figured, this would be a perfect opportunity to take this big synthesizer, which is fun to play with, but I mean, it's not something that you can sit down in front of a computer and play with, different kind of workflow, but it would be cool to take these simple 13 sounds, record them into a program, and then turn them into a drum kit, and then maybe even publish that drum kit so that other people could use the sounds in projects that they're going to be using. And that is exactly what I set out to do. How do you do this? Simple. First step, Audacity. We all know and love Audacity. We use it all the time, some of us. So the simple thing to do is just break open Audacity, plug the synthesizer that you've got lying around your house, and I know you have so many. Plug that, obviously the just the You wouldn't, I just use the headphone output. You can do the left-right output as well. I just do headphone out. I mean, yeah, headphone output into the input on my laptop, make sure that the inputs are turned on, you know, in your KMix or AlsaCon for whatever you need to do to get that to work. Good luck with figuring that out. And then you need to go into Audacity preferences and make sure that the input there is also set for the correct input source. That ought to take you an afternoon or so. But once you get that all squared away, I'm just kidding, of course. It's not going to be that hard. Just you set your inputs, do a couple of tests. You'll see which one is correct right away. And then I would jot it down on a, you know, a sticky note on your computer or something, like a virtual sticky note, because at least for me, the sound system on Linux, I'm always forgetting which input is what and which output means what speaker and stuff like that. But that could just be my problem. So the point is, you get your inputs configured correctly, and I know that sounds pretty basic, but I always forget, so do that. And then you hit record on Audacity. Do a couple of test hits on the synth to make sure that the levels are correct. You know, you don't want it to be too loud, too soft, anything like that. What I like to do is try to find the theoretical loudest sound and just kind of go off of that one. That's usually like a crash cymbal or a snare, something like that. So make sure that that's all good. And then just step through each sound effect that you want to record. What I like to do is I just hit it once firmly and just let it kind of fade out on its own. Now, if you're doing this with a synthesizer, you're going to have to choose what kind of effect you're going for. You know, when you're sampling sounds like that, and you're not building it up from scratch like a soft synth, like AmSynth, you're doing an actual sample bank, you're just going to have to decide, what am I looking for? Do I want a continuous sound that's just going to be able to be looped and looped and looped and looped so that it sounds like a continuous note? Or do I want to give them a full second and then have it decay or whatever you want to do? So that's a little bit more work, I think, at least for me. The drum machine sounds, I mean, they're pretty straightforward. You just hit them, they have a natural decay, wait a few moments, and then hit the next one. Once you've hit all 13 buttons, I chose, like I say, to start out with something very easy. I mean, I have another synthesizer, a little drum machine synth that has hundreds and hundreds of sounds on it, so that seemed like a lot to bite off right away. But once you're finished, stop the recording, and then we'll need to go into Audacity. You better save it first. I would save it. And then you go into Audacity, and just with your cursor, select, you'll see the sound waves right there. So select the beginning of each instrument to the very end of each instrument. This is not precise. It doesn't have to be precise. You just want to make sure that, rather, part of it is not precise. You want to make sure that you're getting the whole sound, obviously. You don't want to cut off the decay. That would sound kind of weird. The easiest way to do this is to zoom in really, 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 really close so that you're almost seeing it sample per sample. You got to get in really close just to get the beginning of the note or the sound. I find that especially with percussion, you really want to make sure that you're getting it right on the hit. You want, because obviously if you're trying to make a beat that is tight and on the beats, you don't want to press a, so to have the computer get the signal to make a sound and there to be even, you know, a millisecond or, well, maybe a couple more, but you don't want it to be too long from the computer saying, okay, make this sound, and then you hear a couple of moments of silence because you got too much of the instrument and got some silence at the beginning, and then you hear the actual percussive hit. You want the percussive part to be dead on, I think. Now, the decay, you don't really care about. That'll just decay naturally. If you're a little bit off on that, I don't worry about that. Sometimes I choose to, what is it, err on the side of, I give myself more than I think I need for the decay, but I really try to be precise about the attack. So once I select the sound, you simply go up to File, and then you export selection as whatever you want to export it as. I did them all as WAVE files, because that was uncompressed. That was the uncompressed option. I could have done it as AUG, but I just chose, I was thinking about it. I wasn't sure about the compatibility. Plus, I felt like probably WAVE, just being pure uncompressed, would be better for everyone. So that's what I did. So that's just pure PCM audio in a .wav wrapper. And name each sound Logically, the way that I kept track of it myself was I just did each button in order on the drum machine so that I knew that that was tom 1, that was tom 2, and then that's hi-hat open, ride, shaker, snare, tom 3, because the buttons are laid out a little bit strangely, but it just helps if you have that visual reference. So just do it right in order, which I did. Export the selection as WAV and name it something logical. Put it all into one folder, preferably a folder named by that synthesizer that you're emulating. Or if you're not doing a synthesizer, if you're not sampling a synth, then maybe you're pulling free sound effects off of the internet. In which case, again, just kind of collect them all together into one folder so that you have your sample bank all organized and together. You don't want to lose track of your sample bank. This would be bad. Okay, so once we've got our sample bank consolidated and named logically for ourselves, we can quit Audacity. We don't really need to save that project, or if we've already saved it, you can ditch it now, I think, as long as you've confirmed that all those samples are really there. And then you'll fire up Hydrogen. Now, Hydrogen is a project, like so many other projects, being developed still. So it is gonna depend a little bit on the version that you've got installed on your system. It's all gonna be the same, it's just that there might be different locations for certain tools. Now I'm using a version out of SVN. It is noticeably different than what I was accustomed to on some of the things that I'd seen in the repository. So either way, what you're going to want to do is find the instrument editor or the instrument rack. It seems to be, I'm almost positive that the old version of Hydrogen that I was used to was calling it instrument editor, but now it's, I think it might be called instrument rack now. Either way, locate that. It's going to be fairly obvious as to which one it is, because it will have the name of the instrument that corresponds to whatever instrument you have selected over on your, well, I call it a piano roll, although CyberCod pointed out to me that this is not a piano roll, but the place where you actually make your little instrument sounds and things like that. Whatever you have selected there is going to be reflected in the instrument editor, instrument rack, whatever they're calling it now. Anyway, so it'll say the name of the instrument. It'll have an attack, a decay, a sustain, and a release knob. It will have a gain knob, a random pitch knob, a cutoff and resonance knob. So there's a lot of little options there. And there are two main tabs. There's the general tab, and then there's the layers tab. Okay, well, none of this really matters to us. Now, if you don't have any instruments loaded, you'll want to load some instrument, from your sound library. And Hydrogen usually comes with a couple of drum kits included, like a general MIDI kit. Maybe the one that I've got has TR-808 emulation kit, so that's what I have to choose from. So I'm just going to select, let's just select the general MIDI kit, and we'll say load that. Okay, so now I've got the general MIDI kit loaded, and over here in my little my sequence editor, or I guess you'd call it my pattern editor, I've got a list down the left-hand side of all the instruments that are contained in this drum kit. So I've got kick, stick, snare jazz, hand clap, snare rock, tom low, closed hi-hat, pedal hi-hat, open hi-hat, all these different instruments, okay? So if I select the first one, which is kick, I can go over to my instrument editor, and I'll see at the top that it says kick. If I click on that, it asks me to rename that, and I'm going to call it bass drum, because that is exactly what, no, it's not, it's more or less what the Yamaha RX15 called it. Okay, now I've just renamed it. Now I'm going to click on the tab that says layers, and I see that there's one layer in this instrument patch, in this particular sample patch. There is one layer because I only have the option of having one version of this sound. Now, if I wanted to get really fancy, and I don't, I could split this instrument up into, say, two or three different accents or velocities, I guess, where you could have a soft bass drum and then a harder bass drum if they press the key harder or if they increase the velocity themselves. Now, there's not really a point to doing this because the Yamaha RX-15 was not touch sensitive like that. So you could pound on the key as hard as you want and the bass drum is still going to sound like the same bass drum. Later drum machines are going to be a lot more sensitive, a lot more touch sensitive. So if you're tapping it, it's going to tap, and then if you hit, it'll switch over to another sample and sound like you're really, really banging on it. And you can do the same thing here in layers. Either way, we're not, because I'm doing the easy version. But there is this solid blue bar, and that represents, under the layers tab, a solid blue bar, that represents the sound available for this instrument. And you can even see this little sound wave down at the bottom. And right now, since I chose the GM kit, it is kick_dry_b.flac. Well, we don't want that anymore, so we're just going to delete that layer, and then we will load a new layer. And we will go into our file system, and here I have in my music folder, in Yamaha RX-15 folder, I have a bassdrum.wav. And I'm going to open that, and that loads it in. And now I've got my new bass drum sound, and you can kind of hear the difference, right? Okay, and then you go back to the General tab, if you want. You go down to the next instrument over on our pattern editor. That sounds like a stick to me. Closest thing to a stick on my RX-15 is a rim shot. So we're going to say rim shot. So I click on where it says stick in my image in my instrument editor. It asks me to rename it. I type in rim shot. Now I go over to the Layers tab. Solid blue bar again. That's the stick as it exists now. I'm going to hit delete button. The delete button on this instrument editor. I'm going to do the load button. Takes me right back to my proper folder. Here's the rim shot sound that I recorded. Perfect. Next instrument is a snare jazz. I go back to the general tab. I click on it. I'm going to just call it a snare drum, in fact. And then I'll say OK. I go to the layers tab. Solid blue bar called sn_jazz_c.flac. Not anymore. I deleted it. Load, snare, open. There you go. You get the idea. It's just going back and forth between the general and the layers. The general shows you the instrument name. That's really the only reason we go there. There's the hand clap. Now I go to the instrument editor general and just rename it just clap, because that is what claps, actually, plural. That's what the RX-15 named it. So we'll say OK. And then go to the layers tab. Delete what's there right now and load a new one in. Okay, you do this over and over and over again. And if you want, I can just keep doing it and you can listen to every step of the way, but you probably don't want that. So let's pretend like it's all done. Then what I would do is go up to Save Library, which is up at the top of the menu, you know, the normal, in the menu bar. The menu, I don't know what that's called, where you've got the menus up at the top. And you say Save Library. And it gives you the opportunity to put in the name, to name the kit. We'll call it Yamaha RX-15, no spaces, of course. Author, I don't know who really came up with these sounds, so I can't exactly give them personal credit, but I'm giving the synth credit in the name, so I'm going to put author down as Klaatu, because I'm the guy who took the trouble to make the kit. And then it says information. And here I could type in any kind of metadata that I needed to. Tell people a little bit about the drum machine, when it was from, some of the features that it had, maybe, things like that, and save it. And now if I go over to my sound library in Hydrogen, where it lists all the different drum kits available to me, which is found in the instrument rack, then you can right-click on any, you know, I've got GM kit, I've got TR-808 now, and then under user drum kits, I've got Yamaha RX-15. The cool thing about this is that it took all your sounds from your consolidated sample bank, copied them into a Hydrogen drum kit folder. Depending on your distribution, I think it's going to differ exactly where that is, but it's not really that hard to find. And so it'll be a folder with all those samples in the folder, just exact copies, so you can ditch your source if you want, as long as you keep track of this. And then in there, there's going to be a, I think it's called drumkit.xml, and that is whatever information, I actually never really bothered looking at the XML itself, but it's whatever information Hydrogen needs to keep track of where everything is, which MIDI signal is going to trigger which drum sound, things like that. So it's pretty neat. You can make a copy of that directory if you want, or just make a copy of the drumkit.xml and copy it back to your source, tar it and gzip it and stash it somewhere, because obviously this is now your sample bank. This is something that you've created. You probably don't want to forget about it and lose it. But more importantly, you could go over to the Hydrogen forums and share your creation and let everyone know, hey, I've got a drum kit here that everyone can use if they want to, and download it and use it well. I have not actually submitted my drum kit to the Hydrogen repository yet, because I don't exactly know who to contact. I know that it is on SourceForge, and that is just the easiest way to get there is go to hydrogen-music.org and then look for drum kits. Yeah, drum kits. There's a link on the right-hand side of the page. And then it says all Hydrogen 0.9.3 drum kits are now hosted on SourceForge, and I just haven't bothered yet finding out who I need to contact in order to get my kit up there, because I just made this kit about 5 minutes ago. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm also going to post the drum kit itself on my site, thebadapples.info/yamaha-rx15.tar.gz. And let me see if I capitalized anything in there. I think I did, actually. Yeah, it's capital RX, capital R and capital X. So it's Yamaha, all lowercase, and then capital R, capital X, 15.tar.gz. Just go to that link, and I'll put it in the show notes as well, I guess. Go to that link. It will start downloading that drum kit. It is only 13 sounds. Very, very small. I think it's less than a megabyte. But the sounds sound great. They're the high-quality Yamaha sounds that you would come to expect from a company like Yamaha. And they are vintage-sounding. You know, they're not super electronic-y, and yet they're not super realistic. They're that sort of interesting place in the middle where they were starting to sound more imitative and yet not super realistic. So it's kind of a fun, some fun sounds to have. Obviously, when you've got, that's part of my point. When you've got all these applications that you can use to do cool multimedia kinds of things, the place that it often breaks down for people is not having the material. They've got the tool, they just don't have the raw material. This is my small contribution toward getting more raw materials amassed for like Hydrogen and things like that. Now, here's another tip. Aside from creating your own drum kit, you can also just purchase them. Like I say, SourceForge has a couple of drum kits for Hydrogen. I've got one now. I will probably have another sometime. But what you can also do is go to your local bookstore, believe it or not, pick up like a Future Music magazine. You might recognize Future Publishing. They do Future Music. They do Linux Format. I think they do PC Format as well. But Linux Format and Future Music are really, really good magazines, and they come typically with a CD or a DVD of stuff. And a lot of times on Linux Format, you will find, Future Music, you will find a disc with, you know, some demo songs on there by different people, but then they'll also have patch files on there. And these are usually just .wav files, or maybe .mp3s if they're pressed for space. And you can take these files, maybe cut them up, because sometimes they don't cut them up for you, cut them up a little bit, and then load them into Hydrogen, and you've got yourself a drum kit again. You can also go out to, you look in the back of Future Music, or maybe if you're in the U.S., you might want to get a U.S.-based magazine like, I don't know, Keyboard or something like that, Digital Musician, that's not what it's called, whatever that other one is. Look in the back, in the classified section, or the ad section. There's usually collections like Loopzilla and all these different collections of just straight up loops. They're not specially designed for any one application a lot of times. Sometimes they are, so watch out for it. But a lot of times they're just straight up sound files. And you can use these just as easily as you can use any sound file. And you can create your own loops out of them. Not in Hydrogen, but in other programs. Like, what's that one? Super Looper or whatever it is. So check that out as well. Don't underestimate the market out there for easy to use prefab sounds. So if that's what you're looking for, if that's more along the line of what you're looking for, don't hesitate to go out and just be aware of those discs. They're out there. They're ready. You know, they're royalty free. You can purchase them and use them on your system. And sometimes that is a lot easier than trying to develop a sense of rhythm overnight, which I'm still attempting to do, failing miserably. So check that out, have fun, knock yourself out, share. Well, we're kind of doing the whole audio application thing, so we might as well stay on that theme. And it struck me, talking to a couple of people about Audacity lately, that Audacity really is a beautiful program. It's intuitive. It's just so simple. I mean, it feels almost like a word processor, you know? I mean, you've got your little I-beam cursor, and you've got the sound waves in front of you, and you just kind of intuit what you can do to them. You can cut them up, you can move them around, you can change amplification, the volume is what I was looking for. You can do all kinds of stuff like that. So it strikes me as being pretty easy to figure out, but as with so many applications that are on the surface simple, there are a lot of features about Audacity that a lot of people don't seem to know about. And one of the ones that I use all of the time and am kind of amazed at how few people I have met so far who actually use this tool is the wildcard tool, which appropriately enough is the shape of an asterisk. It is up in the little toolbar up on the upper left-hand corner of Audacity, just underneath the pencil, the sample editor tool. And the wildcard tool is everything you need it to be at any given moment. Let me explain. If you get the asterisk tool, the wildcard tool, what you can do is if you position your cursor kind of like over the around the 0 decibel mark on your audio, then you get your traditional cursor cursor is what I'm trying to stammer out here, and you can select regions of the audio, and you can do whatever you usually do. You can select it and generate silence or cut and paste and all that other good stuff. Whereas if you position it a little bit higher, you will get your envelope tool. And this is the tool that you would use to adjust your levels during the, you know, not the overall track level, obviously, but the dynamic levels of that track. So, rather, not the track gain, but the dynamic levels of the track. So you've got that just built right in. And then if you position the tool on either the extreme right or the extreme left of that particular track that you have selected right now, or actually any track really, then it becomes the double arrows, the move tool. And you can literally, there'll just be a little gray strip on either side of the track, and you can move the audio regions around without actually getting the move tool. It's really, really, really handy. I was amazed at how many people did not know about this tool. So if you don't use the wildcard tool and you do use Audacity, just basically use it. It's a really handy tool. It will become so addictive once you try it, because you're just not zipping up to that toolbar all the time to get a different tool. You've got everything you need in one tool with the asterisk. Use it wisely. It is very powerful. Hey, look, this is episode 18 of season 3. If you don't know what that music means by now, you got problems, so let's just go do it. Never fear, if you hate music and you don't make music and you don't want to make music and you're tired of all this multimedia stuff, we're finished with it. We're not going to talk about music anymore this episode. However, we're not going to stop talking about the responsibility that we could assume for ourselves as users, but also as contributors to the Linux community, the free software community. This is a topic that I really do believe in because, it'll help save the world and all that other good stuff. No, but really, it's something that I think is important because we're using a free software, we're using a free operating system and all this free software. And one of the things that I think that encourages is the non-consumer mentality, the idea that no, we shouldn't, or we might choose to not just take and take and take, that we can actually make a conscious choice to give back to something that we use and that we feel is important. This is why, for instance, on Linux Cranks, we were talking just this past Saturday about this whole new idea that GNOME has about, like, adopt a hacker. It's great, and it's neat, and it gives structure to the idea of giving back. But it's kind of, as a purist, it's kind of encouraging that kind of same mentality. It's like, you give us something, and then we will send you, this and this and this as a consolation prize. Well, we're getting GNOME as a consolation prize. Why does there need to be this structure? There needs to be this structure, obviously, because the GNOME hackers don't feel like they're getting as much back as I guess they would like to get, which is fair. They're doing a great job. So my point is, not to be confused, my point is that we should all try, I think, if it's in our hearts, to give back to the community in some way. And the cool thing about this, and a lot of people will say to me, Klaatu, I want to give back, I want to contribute, whatever, I just don't know how. I agree. When I first got into it, I thought to myself, well, there is nothing that I can offer this community. They all know how to use Linux. I don't. They all know how to program. I don't. And I had all these things that I could see people doing, and I had no idea. And then I started to realize there were certain areas of knowledge that I did have, actually, that I could pass on to people. And so I kind of started podcasting from time to time. And then I decided that, in fact, I could also help with bug reports, and so I did that. So you just kind of get into it, and you start to realize, yeah, there's actually stuff I could do here. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. It doesn't even have to be a regular thing. Podcasting, I would say, was one of the most, one of the most demanding ways. One of the most demanding ways to give back, other than, like, writing a brilliant program. It's just because you have this sense of, well, I need to release a podcast now. And, it's kind of a scheduled kind of thing, usually. Unless you do it like me and Skrillet do on Fedora Reloaded, where we do it, like, whenever we have a chance, which is fine, too. But the point is, or you contribute to Hacker Public Radio, which, you can just do whenever you've got a good topic. It's a great way to contribute. Another great way to contribute, Hydrogen Drum Kits, which we've already gone over. Yet another way to contribute, fonts. Yes, I said it. I said fonts, and I mean it. I said this back in Season 1, actually, because I had discovered a little program called FontForge. It's the coolest little application that I really have seen in a while. And it's free, of course, and it is a way to create your own font. It's not easy. It takes a lot of skills. It takes mad skills. You have to know vector art, sort of, and you've got to, it just takes a long time. If you think about what goes into font design to get it to actually space correctly from in relation to one another and things like that, it is not the easiest thing in the world. But it is well worth the effort if you're artistically inclined and you decide that you want to contribute to the community. Because if you think about it, like if you take a look at a lot of fonts that come pre-installed on your Linux system, the variety is not as plentiful as you might see on a proprietary system who has purchased a license for Microsoft-branded fonts or for Apple-branded fonts, or for Adobe-branded fonts, and all these other font companies who, just like everything else in the world, they make it all proprietary, and they make it their property, and they charge for it, because I don't know why. I mean, I know someone sat there and designed the font, but charging to have it on every computer system, I mean, they're probably getting a pretty good deal on that. That's probably, in terms of investment, it's probably one of the better investments they're making. To say nothing of the fact that they actually charge, again, if you're going to use that font, you know, on a big billboard or something like that on a national campaign level. That's a good thing to contribute, Font Forge. So if you don't know Font Forge, check it out. It's a really good little application. It is not easy to use. It takes time. It takes effort. But if you're artistically inclined, and if you love the alphabet, FontForge might be an outlet for you. And it is an important area, because I think that the more little things like that that we have out there that is free, the more we can package with our distributions. And again, just as usual, the more self-reliant we can be. And we don't have to go begging Adobe or Microsoft or Apple or anyone else to give us their fonts and let us use them, as long as we promise not to use them for commercial projects, and as long as we don't pass them around and share them with our friends, you know, whatever their agreement is. I don't know. For some reason, I haven't read the end-user license agreements for fonts lately. So check that out. There's another cool site which actually I've been meaning to tell Skrillet about, because we were talking, Skrillet and I were talking on the last Fedora Reloaded about this very thing, about fonts and things like that. So let me see if I can call her up.
Hello?
Hey, Skrillet, I just saw what time it is. Are you up?
Yeah, I was just playing RuneScape.
Oh, okay, cool. So I was actually, remember on Fedora, the Fedora Reloaded episode that we just did? How you were talking about, like, the font.com?
Yeah, I've been loading, like, Linux Book with just, like, tons of fonts. It's
yeah.
So freaking cool.
Yeah, cool. Hey, look, I was actually thinking about fonts, and there's this really, really cool website. I didn't find it, but, the guy, I don't know if you know, Richard F. Quarin, you know him, you just don't know you know him. He does some of those Inkscape tutorials.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And his blog, because I read his blog, and his blog had this thing about this really cool site. It's called yourfonts.com.
Uh-huh.
And it is really, really, really cool. You go there, right, and you print out this sheet of like a chart of all the letters. It's like a grid. It's got all these letters on it. And what you do is you take, you know, a pen or whatever, and you write in each block how the letter would be, you know, to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Write out the letter. Then you scan that sheet back in, submit it back to the site, and they turn it into a font file and for you.
Oh, that you, cool. Is that the link you just IM'd me?
Yep.
Awesome.
Just go to yourfonts.com and check it out. It's really, really crazy. And
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's free?
Skrillet. This is Klaatu you're talking about. You're talking to.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't have even bothered if you're...
Of course.
Sorry about that, dude. Well, you know, I just got attacked by a giant pixie swarm and stuff. threw me off with this. And now my mind is, like, racing ahead to the possibilities.
Yes.
You can, like, make any kind of font and they make it for you.
Yeah, that's true. You could do, like, a webding or a wingding kind of thing. You wouldn't even have to make them letters, really.
Yeah, this could
you
be...
You know?
This could be... Yeah, exactly. Like, this could be something... You know, for, like, clients that like their, you know, identity created and stuff. I mean, this is, wow, I wonder how they do this.
I don't know. I didn't really look into how they were doing it. I just remember thinking it was really cool.
I'm always just so curious as to, like, how people put stuff out for free. I guess they just love it. It's really cool.
I think that's part of it, yeah. I think that's a big part of it, is that they like the technology and the progress that this kind of thing forces upon people. You know, I mean, this is a big little. This is a big way to liberate oneself from, you know, all these like the fonts that you actually have to like pay for if you use for commercial purposes and all that
yeah.
other stuff.
I run into that all the time. It's so annoying.
Which is really
But,
cool. It's
well,
really.
this is really cool because we can, I mean, this is just falls right into like the ultimate shareware for art. I mean, it's like shareware, but
Yes,
for
that's exactly what
fonts.
I was saying. I'm actually recording it. I was recording a podcast before when I called you, and that's exactly what I'm
Not
talking about.
surprised.
Yeah.
Isn't that all you do? Like, you just like
No, believe it or
sit there
not,
in your
no, yeah,
room and record,
no,
like, you have like what, like six shows or
no,
something?
no. Thank you. thank you for putting me on the spot there. No.
Well,
No, but
sorry.
yeah, I was, and that's exactly what I was talking about, actually. That's precisely what I was saying.
Sweet. Yeah, this is really cool. Thanks so much. This is awesome. What a great way to, and it's like, oh, cool. It's like 5 after 12. It's Monday. Yeah, let's forget this RuneScape stuff. Let's get this week on.
Yeah, exactly. This is a good way to kickstart your week, correct? I
Absolutely.
think it would be really cool. I mean, I would even think about maybe not printing out the chart and like taking it into Inkscape or something and really, really meticulously designing letters and then submitting it back. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's overkill for that. I guess there are other applications, but I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities. It's really cool.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. I think that would be fun,
And
like.
you know what this could do too is like, I mean, if people started making their own fonts and then sharing them or something, I mean, that could be a whole new collection of fonts that Linux distros would be able to ship with, because most Linux distros, you know, ship with only the free fonts, which are not necessarily, I mean, and they have to be very specific, I think, like a GPL kind of license where it's really, really free. Like you don't, it's not just royalty free, but you're actually saying, I'm not going to sue you if you use the font, that kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, if people started creating their own fonts, I mean, a lot of them I'm sure are just going to be like, here's my handwriting as a font. But I mean, I'm sure there are going to be other designs that
I'm sure
crop
there's
up.
gonna be a lot of them. I mean, that's just there's so many artistic people out there.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a brilliant idea to turn the so you get the free font people together with the Linux distro people and load all that stuff on there. And I mean, yeah, it's just all about content and saying, screw you, man.
Yeah, right.
We're gonna just share what we've got, and we don't care about your capitalism.
Cool. I like it. Yeah, well, I should get back to the show, I think.
Okay, well, yeah, cool. Thanks a lot. This is great. I'm super stoked, dude.
Yeah, no problem. There you go, that was the show. If you want to bail out now, do so. Otherwise, you're going to be subjected to your own words. Yes, these are the words of the listeners. This is listener feedback. I've got a lot going on in my mailbox right now, so hopefully I'm not. I have a feeling I'm missing. I'm going to probably miss some. But anyway. Nicholas, this guy you'll sort of maybe remember from the time that I got back after Ohio Linux Fest. I'm sure you have this just at the on the tip of your mind. I'm sure you're thinking about this all the time. When I got back from Ohio Linux Fest, I got a ride with a guy I had met at Ohio Linux Fest. He was going like literally the same direction, the same state, and everything. So I hitched a ride with him. So I was really impressed. And he's like this sort of Unix, sort of, I don't know, admin kind of genius guy who like did some really cool stuff. And I can't really go too far into it because you know how companies are. Now, what he says in his email, he was saying that he sent me an email from his G1, and it's his first smartphone. But he said that there is an app on there. I guess it's the Grand Central app, which I know Grand Central from, I think, Dave Yates used to use it, or maybe he still does. I haven't called into Linux, a lot of Linux links, but, you know, it's like a, it's a thing that, sort of a almost a phone forwarding kind of service. So what you can do is from the G1, call Grand Central using your data signal, and it will call you and the person that you want to call, and suddenly you guys will be hooked up, but it's for free because you're not using your cell minutes, you're using your data minutes. And usually I think, and I'm not like the most experienced person on cell phone stuff, that sounds, yeah, he said a killer app. Yeah, I think so. And then, quite humorously, and I'm sure this reads a lot better in an email than it does just me telling you, he signed it, "Good talking to you from the Google Kool-Aid bar." Pretty funny, no? All right. Well, it was funny to read it because it was quite unexpected. So that's Nicholas. Really neat guy. And some cool, interesting information about the G1 and a really neat killer app. So if you're doing the whole G1 thing or just the Android thing in general, I guess, you should be able to get the Grand Central app and utilize it. Which, once again, I mean, that's something that a lot of other phones do not have. In fact, I can't think of anything that would actually enable that for fear of angering their cell provider, I guess. Dr. Gerard Schulz from Germany wrote me and said that he likes my show, that I have very good pronunciation and good humor. He says that he switched to Linux about 7 months ago, and he said that GPotter, that is GPotter, loads your OGG files onto the iPod, transforming them once again automatically. He didn't do anything, it just did it for him. So this sounds to me, I think, like a GStreamer thing. That's what me and Lenny F. I called him Larry F. on the when I was talking about him. He's actually Lenny F. That's what we kind of figured out, is that what was doing that with Rhythmbox is the GStreamer codec pack, and I think that's probably what's going on with the GPotter one as well. I'll bet. And I know that supposedly Dan Washko is working on a version of BashPotter that will do the same thing. Which would be pretty slick, I'm sure. Like I say, I don't really use podcatchers, so they're all kind of, I mean, it's, you know, they're neat, and I understand why they're, that they are convenient, but I just, lately, I don't know why, I just haven't been into them. One thing that he does say is that he especially appreciated my episode, I guess, on rsync, which I don't remember if I did that as a segment on Bad Apples or for HPR. But, yeah, rsync rocks, man. I really do like rsync. I can't tell you how often I use it. So I encourage you to read that man page and learn that program, because it really is cool. I've been trying to reread it lately just so that I could get even more, you know, neat little tricks down and stuff like that. Let's see, who else? Oh, Paul. Paul said that he follows my Augcast and listens in Aug on his Kawan iAudio U3. Now, Chess Griffin did... See, I just love the name drop. Chess Griffin, my pal, who I interviewed on this show, Chess Griffin did this Kawan iAudio review for HPR way back early, fairly early, I should say, in HPR's life. So he really thought highly of it. I heard from, I think... I have a couple of other people, I can't remember who, really seem to love this. And, I mean, frankly, I mean, if it supports Aug automatically, it's kind of neat. So, yeah, the Kawan iAudio, I mean, horrible company name, Kawan. I don't know what they're thinking. But iAudio, whatever, little case I, lowercase I in front of every word. I guess if you have to do it, you have to do it. iAudio U3. Sounds really great to have. Let's see. Oh, yeah, and he pointed out that my feed, my RSS feeds... feed, I only have one now, I guess, still has my Gmail address on it. And that's a good point. I forgot that the Gmail address was even, I mean, an email address was even in the feed. So someday, Paul, I will correct that. Andrew Bignell at andrew4bignell@yahoo.co.uk. That is andrew4bignell, that's the number 4, Bignell, @yahoo.co.uk. Is saying that he wants to apologize for the unsolicited proposal and that he has a very exciting business offer for me. I suspect this guy found out that I won the Swiss lottery and trying to mine, you know, be a gold miner because now I'm all rich and stuff. What can you do? You know, these once you win the lottery, people are going to come after you for all kinds of things. But yeah, thanks, Andrew Bignell, for emailing me that message. And then there's Gruen, also from Germany. This is odd. I got popular in Germany. He says that he just listened to episode 317 of The Bad Apples, and I want to give you a little listener tip for converting OGG to MP3 files. Well, thank you, Gruen. My little Flash MP3 player can play MP3, obviously, and OGG files as well, but sometimes it skips in the OGG files or it reboots, so I made a very simple shell script to convert the OGG to the MP3. No big deal, but very handy. And then he gives me what is about, I'm going to say, I mean, well, you know what, honestly, minus the comments, it's a four-line bash script. Pretty neat. Now, the dependency is you have to have OGG, O-G-G-D-E-C, like OGG decoder, and then lame. So you have to have lame and OGG DEC installed. I'm going to take this shell script and his name, because he doesn't give himself credit in it, and I'm going to post that on the website, my website, so that anyone who wants it can also grab it. Because I think it's really, really cool that people are doing that. I mean, a good bash script, who doesn't love it? So then Frank wrote in, and he said that he does listen, so he's now on my list. And he has been using the iRiver E200. And he says that it's working out for him quite well. And he's got a really cool blog post about the whole subject. And he is using this iRiver on his Slackware system. Now, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you probably know how I feel about Slackware. Love it. Love it. Love it. So Roger Hammer emailed me. Yes, he got his coffee. It wasn't easy. We ended up having to use a helicopter to actually bring it over and drop it down to him. But he did get it, and he's enjoying it probably as we speak. He's probably sitting in front of his fireplace, sipping on Sawtooth Mountain Mud straight from Joshua Tree, California. And Ventris wrote me. Ventris? Sorry, I don't really exactly know how to say the name. I'm going to say Ventris. Ventris did write me. He said that please point me in the direction of Fat Chance Lester. That's, of course, the band who did the music for this for the show. He said, I like the music very much and would like to acquire it. Couldn't find anything on the web. And I wrote him back and told him that actually this is a very common problem. Unfortunately, after the band's disappearance, there was a big power struggle over at the music studio, you know, where they had recorded. And the sound engineer, George, I think was his name, took all the master tapes, and then the producers, Miles and John, took all the edited versions, leaving everyone high and dry, pretty much. It's a bummer, and I'm very, very fortunate to have been in secret communication with the keyboardist during the bulk of their recording time. And by the time that the band disappeared, I had acquired really I think most of their recorded material. And it is from this admittedly coveted and envied collection that I draw the music's, the show's music. So, with any luck, the legal struggle and power plays will be resolved, and the world will finally get to hear the true genius that is Fat Chance Lester. Randy knows who you surely must know if you listen to podcasts. He's called into a couple of different ones, and he's a really nice guy, and he was at Ohio Linux Fest, so I got to meet him and stuff. He's got a really cool idea for a music OGG cast. So it would be indie music released only in an OGG format, and it would be a sort of a HPR structure where it's not just one host every week, because that's a lot to ask. Number one, you'd really have to be in touch with the indie scene, I think. And then number two, you'd have to I mean, a podcast is just really, again, demanding work. So when you can split it up among many people, I think it is a lot easier. So I think that's what he's going to be doing, I hope. I certainly can't wait. I will definitely contribute to that, on occasion, because I do love independent music, and I love Og, and I think it's just a brilliant idea. It's a really good idea to do that. That's about it, I think. That is about it. I hope I didn't miss anyone. My inbox got really cluttered all of a sudden because I was informed that I had to coordinate a big Hacker Public Radio roundtable episode. So suddenly I was like emailing 20 different people and getting all these responses, and wow, it's a lot more activity that inbox has seen in a while. So kind of got confused. But yeah, thanks everyone for emailing in. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back next time. See ya.
Drugs.
Mm-mm.